All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 14 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We have kind of a two-part mission today and next time, and that is to complete our anchor fact work and then to get started here into the archaic history of ancient Egypt by discussing in detail the character who has the somewhat strange name, Menes-Narmer. So I'm going to show you a handout that you're going to receive today. It's going to be posted to the class webpage, and it's going to be an exercise that we conduct on a periodic basis. With this group, we're gonna see just how much it's needed. I'm not sure. And I'm going to expect your feedback, and that will be very helpful as we proceed. It's an exercise called a facts practice. So we're going to look at that for the time being. And then when we're done, with that, we're going to look at an ancient artifact that has to do with Menes-Narmer. And that's our first historical event. So we've got two-part class, and that's actually going to be something that we'll repeat in a sense next week. Next week is a test week. It's the first test of the year. It's going to be a relatively easy one because what we've been doing so far is mostly an orientation. There isn't a lot of really complicated substance here other than the connections and the perspective and some of the relationships between the events and so on, which I'm going to expect you to be able to discuss. But I think it'll be a relatively easy test, a nice kind of way to get introduced to the whole testing procedure and all of that kind of stuff. So next week I'm going to be preparing you for that. So our usual routine is that we do the test prep early in the week, either Monday or Tuesday, and then we move. And then we have a last review class, so we'll have that as well. And then we move the art lecture to Wednesday. So next week, art, history through art will be on Wednesday. And then we do a test preparation class on Thursday, based on the work that you've done on what are called test preparation sheets, which I give you at the beginning of the week. All right, so anyway, we'll sort that out for everybody next week mostly. What you're going to see today is going to be a component of that work. It's going to be, I don't know if it'll look exactly like this. I'm kind of struggling with formatting here in a way, as you will see. It may take a different shape over time. But anyway, here is going to be one of the exercises that will be part of your test. So this is a way to get, you know, nothing but easy points here. But also it has another purpose. So let me go ahead and share my screen with you guys. So this is the timeline that you're familiar with. Suppose I could scroll back up here, right? So this was our anchor fact timeline from before, right? And it's basically kind of gutted out. All it has is a bunch of prompts. And so evidently, your responsibility is to use those prompts to fill in the answers. And like I said, it's kind of a messy page. I appreciate that. And quite frankly, I just have not been able to figure out because this is still, the formatting of all of this is still quite new. So I just haven't been able to figure out maybe a format that would be less busy, less chaotic. But hopefully because we've been looking at this sort of thing so frequently over the past few weeks, it'll still be relatively comfortable for you. And when you see it filled in, then again, it'll be pretty obvious what it is that you need to do. And the point of this, right, in the end, is that you be able personally for yourself, for your own knowledge, in future learning, be able to generate your own personal portal and chart of history. A chart that allows you to orient yourself to any story that you will ever learn in history. You'll be able to plot the coordinates of a story, whatever it is that you're learning, and you'll be able to say, okay, here's how this finds its way to me, and here's how I can personally think about the significance of what I'm looking at and challenge it and make sure that, because all too sadly, make sure that the stuff that I'm being taught is meaningful, truly, not merely, you know, stuff about the past, but something that actually can help me understand my world. And so hopefully if you become equipped with such a, you know, navigational expertise, then you'll have the ability to interpret things in history on a personal level. You'll have the ability to understand whatever it is that you encounter in history, because most of the history you encounter out in the world is not going to be present-centric. It's not going to be designed for you. It's not going to be designed in order to help you understand the world that you live in. It's mostly going to be just bombarding you with facts about the past. You're going to have to figure out a way to deal with that, to cope with that. And I hope that having tools like this one, your own personal portal and chart of the past, will help you. You'll be able to pull this up and you can personally spend some time thinking about what the deeper significance or important value of whatever it is you're studying might be in relation to this. So, anyway, let's talk about the different features of what we've got rather than worry too much about what we don't or whether or not the formatting of this thing is going to change or improve or what have you. Obviously what I've done here on Vax Practice 1A is I've put the dates of all of the anchor facts that you need to have so far. And we've discussed them so consistently, so repeatedly that I think they are quite, you know, quite automatic and easy to position and so on. And so that's kind of what we're going to do here is just quickly fill this in so that you get a taste for what a completed facts practice looks like. And then I'm going to post both the empty worksheet and the answer key to the class webpage today so that you can experiment with it yourself. See what your comfort level is in filling in this entire sheet. Okay? So basically, I'm just going to go ahead, give me a second here to prepare an entry. And then we'll just fill it in. I think this needs to be kind of bigger. There we go. And so the first one, for as an example, I'm going to do 1492 because that's such an easy one, right? What you would do is you're going to look for the prompt and you're going to look for a line that is connected to that. And then you're going to enter in a very short, you know, essentialized answer. Whatever it is that you need to put that can encapsulate the historical fact in question as briefly, succinctly as possible. Okay, so basically 1492, there's no need to write Christopher Columbus. There's no need to write the discovery of America or anything like that, right? I mean, if we write the word Columbus, we've got it set. Okay, and you're going to do the same thing for all of the particular facts. So if we were to take that and apply that principle over here to say 476 AD, what would be a quick way to get that down? Abby, how you doing? You having technical problems there?
Yeah, the quick way to get it down, I think, would be follow Rome.
Yeah, I don't think you can do shorter than that. I mean, if you write Rome, then that's kind of a little bit equivocal, and I wouldn't be a big fan of that. So, you know, I would just write fall of Rome. Juliet says Rome falls. That sounds like you're really trying to get so short. I mean, at a certain point, I don't think you need to go shorter, right? So I think that's about right. And, you know, but I wouldn't be upset if you wrote Rome Falls. 1776, you can write any number of things here, whatever your preference is, right? So I would say Independence. Or, if you want, you can write Declaration of Independence, or you can just write Declaration. But, of course, anything that you put onto the sheet has to stand without any question in your mind, without even a pause. Okay, if there's a pause, no good. Okay, it's got to just leap out that if you write Independence, you mean, oh, Declaration of Independence. Yeah, it's got to be that fast. Okay, so if it's not, then you should write more. All right, and, well, here's one for you. What do we put over here? Most important anchor fact of all. Juliet?
Sorry, present.
Okay, not bad. I would say personalize it even more. Remember what we have kind of on the diagram itself? Abby, what would you write?
I am here.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I think that is the ultimate way to do it. I am here, right? Because this is you studying history, and that's the purpose of it, right? So this is you, and this is the past, and it's all connected. It's not separate from you. That's the purpose of the chart. Okay, so then we have the fact that we are going to do today, which is Manet's Narmer over here. So I'll go ahead and put that in, and I'll explain again this curious name in case you're not familiar with it, or even if you are familiar with it, I'll explain the strangeness of the two-part kind of a name. We have a really simple one over here as well for circa 4 BC. That one's really easy to put down. You could just put Jesus because, you know, everybody's going to understand that particular event. If you need to write Jesus Christ is born or something like that, go ahead. Like I said, it's got to be automatic. Okay? And again, automatic association. This is a two-part entry, 509, 508. What are you going to write here? Let's make sure that we have the right amount of information on there. What are we going to write? Theo, what would you put?
Well, so I would put either Athens slash Rome or democracy slash republic.
Yeah, and I would put all of that because yeah. We've got to get it sorted out. So if we're gonna complete each of the two units, what would one unit be?
Maybe Athens, comma, democracy, and then Rome, comma, republic.
There you go. Right, exactly. I'm putting a dash. Same basic idea, right? But that's what we need. There is an indication of those crucial things. Okay, so good. Definitely put that there. What order you put them in can be, you know, one of those things that gets people tripped up, whether 508, 509 comes first or 508, and whether it's Rome or Athens. I mean, you just have got to sort that one out. It's a tandem fact. If you really, really need to put Rome in front of Athens because it's 509, okay, you can go ahead and do that, right? But basically, you have to keep that sorted out in your head. I don't think that's altogether too much there. And then we have the two anchor facts which are new and which, well, now I'm going to modify this a little bit more. Okay? Formatting is challenging. So I'm going to put this. And that's going to mean that you have one, you know, that's more important than the others. I'm actually going to remove, I'm going to get rid of the bold font over here. Okay. And so hopefully that will, I don't know, help you guys to do what I'm intending for you to do. So we got two more here. We have the story, which you're going to be assigned in writing. I don't know if I'll get the assignment to you today or tomorrow, but basically the story of our connection to archaic Egypt. And our connection to archaic Egypt works a lot like our connection to classical antiquity. There is a civilization, it goes extinct, and then our knowledge of it is revived. Okay, so we want to follow this chart, this navigational chart here back to us. And so the civilization of ancient Egypt and of Menes-Narmer is replaced by Islam. So over here, you're going to write whatever is useful for you. It can be as simple as birth of Islam. If it is an accessible entry for you, you can write, because really the moment here is called the Hegira. Okay, so that is to archaic Egypt what the fall of Rome is to classical antiquity. It's the moment where one civilization is going away and is getting replaced by its successor. And then, we're going to have to reestablish our connection to that ancient past. All right, so we got that, and then we have this entry over here. Right, so this again is one that I don't know how to make this simpler or easier. I may end up having a completely different fax practice if this is too ugly. Like I said, I'm going to be thinking about it, working on it, trying to hone this to make it look nicer and over time. Okay, but anyway, for now, I'm just gonna. This is what I've got. So let's go ahead here and write a couple things. First item is Napoleon, but that one you don't have to write. Okay, the one that you do have to write is the bridge, and then the other two facts are merely allied to that bridge fact. Okay, so that hopefully everybody gets that particular point. So this one is kind of the most complicated one here. It's totally a matter of your comfort level. Okay, I suspect that the more you see this, the more that all three of these will be nice and easy for you. But if you're feeling like it's too much, then all you need to do is remember 1799 Rosetta Stone. So it's up to you. There's no definitive answer to that. It's all about your particular comfort level, what is meaningful to you. Is it more meaningful to you to keep it simple? Just to say to yourself, well, the bridge between us and ancient Egypt is the Rosetta Stone. Or is it more useful to you? Is it more compelling to you? And is it easy enough for you to remember that, well, the reason we have a connection to archaic Egypt is because Napoleon conquered it in 1798, leading to the discovery of the Rosetta Stone and its translation in 1822 by Champollion. It's up to you. Which one of those is the kind of internal formulation that you're comfortable with? The more complicated one or the simpler one? There is, like I said, it's up to you. Okay, that's why I've got this, trying to include two different levels of difficulty on here. Maybe I need to just create two separate sheets, in fact. So I think I probably will do that now that I mention it. One that just has 1799 on it, and the other one that has all three dates for those of you who want to do that. All right, so as you can see, there are a few other things on here that you need to be able to label on your own personal portal land chart. And so the ones, all of the colors that I think need labeling are indicated on here. So in fact, I probably need one more. So over here, right, we have Egypt. Over here, well, this is slightly redundant, but okay, it's Islamic culture. Over here, separate for the time being, but we've already managed to make some connections. It's India. And over here, again, separate mostly for the time being, is China. Okay. In both cases, there is a connection and there's hybridization going on in those civilizations to this day, where Western culture, rooted in Greece and Rome, is changing life in those places. And it is a fascinating thing to watch because, for instance, we have India, the world's most populous democracy. And on the other hand, we have China, a country which most people around the world are watching very, very carefully because it is so important and so populous, but it's not a democracy, and a lot of people are wondering if it ever will be and what it will take to bring China into the modern democratic community of nations rather than the oppressive communist political system that it continues to have. We'll see. So this is all very interesting stuff. If you're looking at the world and you're trying to understand more about China, for instance, which is such an integral part of the world today, really being able to map China on this diagram is going to be your most empowering ability. Because you understand right away, just from looking at this chart, that China is its own civilization, to be sure. But it has experienced a hybridization with the West. And it is very different now than it ever was on its own. And everything that China is doing today, everything that has happened in China since its contact with the West, is China coping with its contact with the West. All of it. That is the meaning of the history of China, is China trying to deal with the fact that it is in contact with the West, whether it likes it or not, and it is trying to make its way through the world now in a Eurocentric and now America-centric world, and that is everything to Chinese history. If you get that, you'll understand just everything, all the headlines in the news and everything. So all of this is designed for you guys at this level to kind of put everything in perspective, put everything in, as they say, right, in a big picture. So to fill in that, we have a couple more things, right? The blue, we have America, the green, we have Europe, getting a little bit bunched up there. Yes, it's messy, but for now, it's the best I can come up with. And then we have two more. Two more items. Oh, actually, we have three more. This red culture over here, which is labeled in a red prompt, is Russia. Okay. These ones are not in a color because, well, they're not an entire civilization. They're the phase of history of that civilization. What is that sequence that we have to understand when we go from antiquity to America? What are the two key terms that we need there? Keen, go ahead. Oh, hold on a sec. I didn't forgot to mute. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first one would be the Dark Ages, and then following that is the Renaissance.
Exactly. All right, so absolutely. All right, so one more. So this, correct me if I'm wrong here, is a completed Facts Practice 1A. Is there anything that's a prompt that hasn't been filled in yet? I suppose I don't need all of these separate lines now. Get rid of this one. And this one, because it's really just requires three lines, and the spacing on this could be better. Anyway, I shouldn't do too much editing right here, right now. So anyway, something like that. Let's see. Did we get it all? I think we got it all. Yeah, so I think what I'd like to do, I mean, start with this. It's what I've got for the time being. If I can come up with a better format, just to make this less busy, less chaotic, I'll do my best to do that. But for now, this is what you're going to get as an answer key at this level. And so your job is simple. You look at the key, make sure you can fill it in independently, and then print off an empty one that has none of the answers, just the prompts, and then fill it in. And your first goal is to be able to fill it in at all. Most people here, I think, are probably can already do it, and maybe even almost effortlessly, which is great because we have a ways to go this year, and you want to be on the strongest foundation you can be, and so that's great. But it'll probably take a little bit of time to get used to this, and there might be some milestones here that are still novel, perhaps a little bit shaky. So that's your main goal, is to be able to fill this sheet in from memory without any references, and basically to automatize the associations. To automatize the associations that are involved in navigating through history. Okay, so that you basically, like a mariner of the ancient Mediterranean, you can start wherever and navigate back home to you, to I am here. And always feel like whatever it is you're studying is situated in its full and proper context. Questions, comments? All right. Anybody comes up with an ingenious formatting tip on how to improve this so that it's not so messy, please let me know. I welcome any suggestions. I'm not a graphic designer, but I have to be a jack of all trades when I'm a history teacher. So anyway, could probably be improved in lots of ways, but it's what I've got so far. Okay, good. So we're gonna go ahead and, like I said, I will. What's this now? Oh, no, I didn't want that. We're gonna go ahead and go to Mene's Armor now. Okay, so look for this on the class webpage. Let's go to Mene's Armor. There we go. So this is, in a way, kind of like an archaic history through art class, or a history through archaic art class, because this artifact that we're going to look at here is an archaeological piece of evidence used by archaeologists and historians as part of the puzzle to understand Egyptian history. It's a great representation, symbolic, artistic representation of the very first event in history. We know plenty of things that happened in the past before this. The problem with those events is that we don't know when they happened. Not really, not precisely. We can't tie them together with any other events, and therefore we can't build a chronology. And so we say, for instance, that perhaps the first writing was implemented circa 3200 BC, 3300 BC, in Mesopotamia or someplace like that. But the thing is, we don't have anything to tie to that. So it's just complete, kind of throwing darts at a blindfolded, throwing darts at a calendar and saying, oh, they did it then. And on the other hand, this event, we have evidence to build a chronology for it. We have a special set of documentation from ancient Egypt that allows us to assign a particular date to it and to say it happened circa 3000 BC. And when we say circa 3,000, we don't mean plus or minus 100 years. We're actually pretty happy with saying plus or minus just a few years. We might not be able to pin it down to the exact year. We still got to put a circa in front of it. But we're pretty happy with when it happened. And it puts it around 3,000 BC. So, what happened? Well, then from this artifact, we don't have, there's very little hieroglyphic writing. There is a little bit. But from this artifact, we have to interpret the events artistically. And then we then combine that with whatever documentary evidence that we have. And we do have some. So if we were to look at this, you would find this. You're an archaeologist and you're digging in the ground and you're at a very important temple site. And you find this piece, and you preserve it and you care for it and everything. And you see that it's a flat stone tablet. And that on one side of it, you see this drawing. And then when you flip it over, you see this. So it's a single piece. It's not two separate objects. It's a single piece. This is the front face. This is the back face. And so you then, are looking at this and you're trying to piece together what the symbolic meaning is. Why did the Egyptians build this? And what does it symbolize? And later on, and with all of the work of the entire profession of Egyptologists around the world, you're connecting this based on the site there it was found, the age of the artifact, and so on, and all the documentary evidence, and you're understanding that this very likely represents that moment in time. So it's, this is our window. This is, in a way, this is our bridge to the most ancient history we know. So what does it tell us? What does it tell us about ancient Egypt? What does it tell us about what was going on? Well, let's use our art appreciation skills. So let's start for today with the front side of the tablet. Treat it like a work of art, because that's what it is. It's a work of archaic art. So using your art appreciation skills, what would you do with it? Theo, go ahead.
Well, so I see a man in a hat which looks like a bowling pin.
Yeah.
With what looks like a badly drawn club. That looks like he's maybe holding someone and then about to hit them with the club. And there's an eagle nearby.
Okay, so that's kind of a little bit of a survey of the scene, which is all right. In terms of our art appreciation methods, how could we maybe articulate the process here of understanding this tablet and using the techniques, right? All right, that's almost kind of like a survey, which is almost like a first impression. Okay, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing this. Okay, now that we've kind of surveyed it, you can say, okay, I see another character over here. I see some other characters down here. Okay, and I see some bowl symbols up at the top and perhaps something else in the center here. Okay, so once we've surveyed it, all right, now tell me about the logic of it. Now let's begin our structured process of art appreciation. Thinking of this as a work of art, what would you do with it? And a work of art that's telling a story. Right? Very much like the ones that we look at in much more mature, much more accomplished art. But this is the same thing. It's art. So what do we do? Once we've surveyed the scene, we always do the same thing. Abby?
Try to figure out what's going on.
Okay, right. And in the story, what does that involve?
Looking at different symbols and different things that are happening, expressions on people's faces,
Okay, right,
posture,
but there's
gesture.
an order that we do that in. And there's a logic to our proceeding. Juliet?
You have to find a main
Find the
character.
main character. Okay, right? Okay, so what do we do? I mean, it's so simple here, but it's worth naming in that way. Even in archaic art, we see some of the same principles. So interesting, right? We have the main character in the middle. He is larger than all the other characters. His gesture and posture are unique. He is uniquely dressed. He is conducting or taking actions which are unique. So, oh my goodness, I mean, even in archaic art, we see this combination of techniques that is such a basic set of manipulations in terms of, okay, we want people to understand this, right? The Egyptian artist who created this wanted people to understand this tablet is about somebody. Who's it about? This guy down here? Right? He wants us to understand this tablet is about somebody, our main character. So, our central character. Okay, what about him then? What does he want us to understand about this character? Nemo says, obviously he's the king. What do you mean, obviously he's the king?
Well, he's the king of Egypt. He's the most famous one.
Well, yeah, but you're importing. You're importing your knowledge here. I want you to take this tablet and look at it as a work of art. And, not knowing in advance that Mr. Powell would only select this because it's the most important artifact. Look at the object and tell me what you see. Abby?
Well, I get the sense that he is in charge just because he's standing so tall and in the foreground and is holding something up threateningly, and he looks like very, very important and in charge. But.
Okay, yeah, and this object is a club or mace. So it's a weapon, right? So this is, and this is the gesture is he has one arm down, he's grabbing this guy by the hair, and he has the other arm raised with the weapon. So, again, history through art. What's gonna happen here?
Well, he's probably gonna kill that guy and maybe and become in charge or something.
Okay, yeah, he's probably going to kill that guy. He is at least threatening him, but I think the very simple interpretation is that he's going to kill him. We might be able to ally that with some of the other symbols that we're going to see on the other side of the tablet, where they're the outcome here. This is kind of like the beginning of the story. This is the end of the story. All right. So he's wearing this really strange looking hat, very distinctive, right? So that sets him apart. Nobody else on the tablet is wearing a hat. Okay. And he has this man who is on his knees. And he's holding him by the hair. It's rough. It is violent. And it seems to be leading to him basically striking him and killing him. And it's ceremonial, right? I mean, he's beaten. He has no weapons. He's not resisting. It's the end. If there ever was even a conflict, it's just so dominating, so ceremonial. He's gonna bash his head in, and that's the end of it. All right, so that is, imagine you come to this tablet, and that's really what needs to jump out at you. That an artist has recorded a really culturally significant act of violence. Rosie.
Sort of true because, like, this you see, like, if in ancient Egypt, Egypt history, lots of tablets and stuff that people find have like pictures of things like this on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen in on the wall inscription, we saw another character very similarly posed, right? In the temple there of Abu Simbel. So this is going to become an Egyptian icon, in fact, this type of representation of a pharaoh, as it turns out. Okay, but what else is going on here at the beginning of the story? What about at the bottom? What's our supporting cast doing? Abby?
It looks like there are people running, although I can't really tell because there's something weird about it. It looks like the people are... They're just really weirdly illustrated. It looks like they're blended together or something.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's not that easy to make out, but you're right. I mean, arm down, arm up, leg front, leg back, right, up in the air. Yeah, I mean, it's primitive art, so it's not the most realistic of all things, right? But it is pretty straightforward. It's two characters running. What is, I think, the most distinctive about them is their heads. They're running to the right, but what are they doing at the same time? Which is such a basic, again, kind of raw symbolism. Theo.
Well, they're looking to the side.
Yeah, or looking back, which symbolizes what?
I mean, if there's something there.
Yeah, okay, but if you're running to something, you look forward. If you're running.
Yeah, so they're running away.
Running away from something, you're looking back at that thing that you're getting away from. Right, so we definitely have this sense that these characters are fleeing, right, from the advance of the great conquering hero, right? They're running away from him. So we have a story that's being told, almost like an ancient Egyptian comic book with a couple different panels in it here. And we have a main panel, and then we have this other panel. They're running away, and so what's going on, right? I mean, it's a pretty straightforward representation. There's one other character here in terms of just human-shaped characters. Let's go look at him briefly. Okay. Does anybody can anybody decipher a little bit what they're seeing there? Not necessarily easy. For one thing, he's smaller, right? What do you make of that? Interpret that variously. Juliet, go ahead.
He's less important.
Okay, that's a really good answer. That's an artist's answer, right? Okay, so a basic answer would be maybe he's a child. Or, you know, just kind of trying to literally interpret the size of the character as being a representation of you know, that we're expecting this to be all accurate and everything. But in terms of art, especially in terms of primitive art, it's a very reasonable interpretation that his importance, it's his status that is being symbolized by the size of the character. Theo, go ahead.
He's also holding two objects.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it has a necklace on.
Yeah, he does have a necklace on. He does seem to have some other object here. And then I think this is a vessel with water, if I'm guessing. And these are sandals, a pair of sandals. So if he's holding these objects, and he's depicted, you know, in kind of concert with the main central character, what do you suppose is the significance? Theo?
Well, I think he could be a servant or like holding the larger part of a person's stuff.
Stuff, yeah, exactly. His paraphernalia. I mean, you know, bashing people's heads in is hard work, so he needs some water afterwards. And when he's done, he can put his slippers on and relax. So, you know, it's symbolic of his power. He has, you know, a servant, a squire, whatever kind of character who's there in support, basically. Yeah, so it's pretty straightforward. It's not as if these archaic artists would be somehow, you know, beyond unbelievably sophisticated or anything. It's pretty straightforward. However, there is one element at least on here that is very curious. So if you want to take a look at it before next week, be my guest. I'll post this image to the class webpage so that you can look at it. And then, of course, next week what we'll do is we'll look at the flip side of this and we will understand the significance of the tablet and why, based on the artistic symbolism, historians are so convinced that this represents that crucial event in history representing a person sometimes called Menes, other times called Narmer, and why they would view this as a representation of a historical event of great significance. So go ahead and look it over if you care to in advance, and we'll proceed here. There's a really important symbol here, which we'll talk about, and then we'll look at the flip side of the tablet and see what we can figure out. All right, but that's all we got time for. So look for the facts practice. Hopefully you can work with it, even if it's messy. And good luck with that. And we'll, of course, tomorrow is History Through Art. And then we return to all of this content and we'll start to get ready for the test next week. Okay, folks. Thank you very much. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.